Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 54. I'm about to go next door. No one really cares about the guy. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 54, recorded on May the 18th, 2016, brought to you by RayRay.net, and it's being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. I am Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray. And if you've never listened to this podcast before, or have never heard of me, hello, I'm Ray Ray. I'm mostly known as an NBA writer at RiceForTheNoLookPass.com, and you might have seen my work in various sites such as ESPN, Sports Illustrated, NBC, CBS Sports, blah, 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 blah. But you see, this podcast is all about the fundamentals. I talk to friends, and a lot of them happen to be sports personalities, or maybe even personalities in other forms of entertainment. And we talk about the cool things in basketball, other sports, video games, anime, or just life in general. Basically, it's the fundamentals of life. First off, we're going to kick the show off with my friend EJ Christian as we do our segment called Kicking It Old School with Ray Ray and EJ. We're going to talk about our own personal sports heartbreaking moments, which, you know, moments of sports that made us crazy. And after that is the main event as I talked with Pamela Horton, who is the host of the YouTube gaming channel Gamer Next Door, and she was also Playboy's Miss October 2012. We're also going to talk about the video game Chrono Trigger, you know, the classic RPG made by Square, and it came out for Super Nintendo, Nintendo DS, and PlayStation. And also, we're going to talk about some of her favorite games of all time. So, without any further ado, let's go ahead and get it started. Let's go ahead and kick it old school. Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ, EJ Christian with me this time on a sunny afternoon because, you know, we're much more live there on a sunny afternoon and say 3 o'clock in the morning like we just did last night on your podcast, Earnestly Speaking Podcast. What's up, EJ?
Screw you, man. It's sunny for you. It is rainy as a mother ever here in Florida. I don't know if it's because the Miami Heat actually are on the playoffs or Pat Riley is now, you know, this press conference down in AAA. Giving his review of the season, and of course the sky is part ways because of that. So when Riley speaks, everyone reacts. But it's other than that, it's a good time. Ray, how you doing?
I am good. And you, funny how you mentioned the Heat because they just got eliminated in the NBA postseason. I'm sorry, but okay. the appropriate topic here now is we're talking about personal heartbreaking sports moments.
Oh, great.
Yeah, great. So great. Very really appropriate.
Very appropriate. Although I will say, moving to Toronto in that game on Sunday was not even my top 10. I actually thought they didn't win the game, to be honest with you. I thought they had a chance. I just think with everything that happened this year with the injuries and, you know, it's just too much to overcome at that point.
They did good, though. They did good. And I actually thought the Miami Heat would go all the way to the East Finals before falling to Cleveland. But, right. You know, again, injuries, especially Chris Bosh being gone, that scary, scary blood clot issue. So this is not in your top 10 because this is actually more inspiring than heartbreaking in a way.
Yeah,
so,
I have moments that literally broke me for a good season. I mean season in terms of like, an entire winter, an entire spring, and you know what I mean? I've had moments where it broke me.
This is serious. Let's hear it.
Well, I have two. I have three, actually, and two involve the Miami Heat, and the other one involves the New York Giants, actually. There's also a wild card here. Here's a wild card. The wild card one for me is the Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees. And look, the Yankees were I'm a big time Mets fan. And even though the Mets were a heavy underdog in the series, it's not that we lost, it's who we lost to. I've always said that New York Yankees fans are the most cockiest and most, like, I don't know, annoying, one of the most annoying fan bases of the bunch. I don't care if people listen to the show, but Yankee fans, screw you. Screw you and you and you. Yankee fans, to me, are so, what's that word? I don't know, but, you know, I can't take that. So that's my, one of my wild cards.
Okay.
I have three standouts. The NFL one, New York Giants fan here, when they lost to the Niners in 2002 in a wild card game.
Right.
And the reason that broke my heart was because, number one, I hate the Niners, number one, okay? And I'm a football
fan.
Why
are we friends, by the way? Because I'm a Niners fan. You know this, right?
It's okay. You guys f***ed up. So good. And that was, by the way, the last football we won, we beat you guys on the way to the Super Bowl, so yeah, it's all good. Anyway. so we, you know, in terms of that game, it's how we lost the game on one. I mean, we up 38-14 late in the third quarter.
Right.
And look, that Giants team was pretty good. It wasn't a Super Bowl team. Although I will say the league at that point was actually kind of wide open in a sense where you could make a splash. But that Giants team may be able to go to the conference championship, maybe even to the Super Bowl a year. Remember, they went to the Super Bowl 2 years before that, so it wasn't like these guys hadn't been there before. But the way they lost that game, and T.O. made his name, really made his name in that game, too. I mean, that was so, look, I've never missed a Super Bowl in my entire life, an entire playoff run in my entire life, except that one. That game was so bad to me, told me to hell, that I didn't watch the entire rest of the, remember, that was a wild card game, so I didn't watch the rest of the football the rest of that season.
Got it.
And that includes Super Bowl also. I skipped the Super Bowl that year of all, because I was just so disjarred by what happened in that game.
Okay, it was the best Super Bowl anyway, so that's okay.
Yeah, Tampa against Oakland, yeah, it must be terrible. So I didn't miss anything, but still. The other two involved the Heat. One was 2011 at the Mavericks. Where that's the one time where William was LeBron James, I mean, where the hell was he in that series? Like, it's so weird because he was so dominant up to that point. And then after game two, when the Heat lost game two in that surprising fashion, up 15, when they could have taken control of that series and pretty much up to being 2-0, you know, they lost. They really lost it. Even though they won game three, they just lost winning that series. And then LeBron, out of nowhere, just falls apart. And there's no rhyme or reason why it happened. You know,
I remember very well. LeBron had 8 points in game four, and in game five had the emptiest triple double we've probably seen in NBA history.
Exactly. Yeah, he did. And the thing, and looking back now, I feel so silly saying this now because I wrote a blog back then too. And I can find it somewhere on the internet. It's somewhere in the archives or in the trash of the internet. Defending him at that point. But here it is. Dwayne Wade shows up in that series still. But, by the way, if the Heat win that series, it's Wade the MVP, not LeBron. This was a record. And Chris Bosh played LeBron in that series also.
Right.
He hit a game winner in game two.
Game three,
And also played well all throughout the series. I mean,
But
LeBron, and just the fact that he just did not know what the hell was going on. I mean, he looked so disjointed at that point. That was a heartbreaking time, all because of the fact that also the narratives in that year for the Big Three and the Heat and, oh my God, you know, this evil team, the most evil team in the world. So carrying all that pressure and carrying that load as a fan and a guy who covers the team now, you know, it was like, oh, this is unbelievable. And, you know, that whole summer was great.
Let me preface this really quick. You know, it's funny because Jason Terry, playing for the Mavericks at the time, was my first face-to-face player interview. Huh?
Screw him.
Anyway, I'm just saying, he's my first player face-to-face interview with Jason Terry at Summer League 2010. And I asked him about the Big Three in Miami Heat. And what he said was prophetic. He was like, they gotta get through Texas first. We can take care of LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. And of course, that season later on, they would win it. So, I thought that was very prophetic by Jason Terry.
Well, it's funny because, he was correct. And by the way, both the losses that he had in the finals were by Texas teams, San Antonio's other one. But that one, it hurt because it was so annoying. That was, like, more annoying. I was more angry about that one. The one that stands out the most outside the Giants, I think the Giants one passed this one, too. Another Heat-related one is the 2005 Eastern Conference Finals.
Ah.
Seven. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've always said that that 05 team, Heat team, was better than the 2016 to win a championship.
Right.
So yeah, had the veterans, and Riley came back and stuff. But I thought the team, that was the last great Shaq year.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that year he was runner-up MVP, Steve Nash?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
First year of Miami. You know, Dwayne Wade gets hurt in Game 6.
Right.
Play Game 6. He hurt his hip or something like that. I can't remember what was exactly the injury, but he missed Game 6.
Mm-hmm.
He interrupted that series. And in Game 7, he plays, but he's not the same guy.
Yeah, they lose at home, yeah.
I'm convinced they beat San Antonio in the finals, too, also. It never happened. Now, granted, they win them in the final next year, but that Game 7 was heartbreaking because I felt like that was the best chance that he had at the time to stack four titles. I mean, think about it. If he win that title, and they go back-to-back, say they win the, 2006 altitude, and then say LeBron gets kind of his ass and wins, 11, that's five titles in about 10 years.
Right.
And now we can
dynasty.
About Lakers type shit now. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
But that's my top one there with among the Giants and wild card game in 02. So that the Heat lost losing the 05 conference finals was heartbreaking to me. I was so depressed for days upon days. So
how long were you depressed in that time period?
I was depressed because I mean I watched the finals that year. I wasn't as bad as the Giants losing. Because I knew in my heart that if the Heat were healthy, Wade was healthy in that last two games, they would have won that series. So
that's
fair.
Yeah,
I wasn't necessarily mad at the fact that I wasn't pissed off about it. Like I knew they gave their all, and that Game 7 came up to the final basket. You know what I mean? So they gave their all. In the case of the New York Giants, though, they literally squandered the lead, and they should have not squandered. You know, they literally gave the game away, and then it's so fitting the last play of the game, the field goal that never happened because the guy mishandled the snap and all that.
Right.
And they offered a 5 call on the Niners, but it didn't because the guy there was an eligible receiver on the field. You know, it was so fitting that the chaos of the Giants and how they lost that game and the chaos in that last play. It was fitting they lose that game. That could be the point where I just couldn't watch football the rest of the year.
So mine, first of all, 91 Lakers Bulls. My brothers are Bulls fans.
Why was that?
I was only 12 at that point, okay? And I've always been a Lakers fan. Like, I grew up, the Lakers are good, the Celtics are bad, whatever. And, it's actually my second finals in America, but this is my first time watching it throughout. And, of course, they're gonna root for the Lakers. Yeah, go Lakers, right? And
yeah.
Roger, my brother Roger's been a Michael Jordan fan, Chicago Bulls fan forever as well. So here he is rooting for the Bulls. And, it's a lot of back and forth between me and my brother at that point. And I'm, of course, all Lakers, right? And the series goes 5 games, and it was over quickly after 4 straight wins by the Bulls. And then and of course, as a 12-year-old, that sucks. I'm still a kid at that point, and it really sucks. Yeah.
Cool.
And then, of course, my brother's taunting me, like, ah, that's right, Bulls are better than Lakers, And, of course, I didn't understand, of course, that the Lakers was at the end of their, at the end of their run, because Magic's 32 years old at that point, and he would retire later on, unbeknownst to us later. But it was grating, breaking for me, and I would just, challenge my brother to a fight, and then there was that one point it was fun. Well, I was 12, so, we didn't know any better.
For context, though, that Lakers team overachieved that year. That team should.
They really did.
They weren't even the favorite to come out of the conference that year, going into the season. I mean, that
Portland. It was Portland.
That was Magic's really greatest year because to me, picking a Vlade Divac, who was in the second year, who was still not even polished,
mm-hmm.
And don't forget too, Dave Vernon didn't play that finals. He got hurt.
Byron Scott got hurt too.
And those games were actually really close. They weren't a blowout. They won one game, game one, of course. But other than game two, when Jordan came back, with a vengeance, those games in L.A. were actually really, really tight.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That team overachieved, in my opinion. So the fact that he was there to begin with was an accomplishment.
Yeah, but it was funny because, we would be at, at the apartment next door. And then suddenly Roger would just bring up the Chicago Bulls and would just taunt me, the Lakers suck, blah, 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 blah. So we'd wrestle in front of the next door neighbors, and they're just like, what is wrong with you guys?
Yeah,
Like, we would do this for like 2-3 months after the finals were over. So, yeah, so it was like really big for me at the time. The other heartbreaking sports moments for me were Niners and Cowboys related. And you probably already know which ones they are.
The 92 and 93?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. The first one was probably, worse because the Niners were at San Francisco and they lost. And I have all these friends who were Cowboys fans, so I get to hear from all of them, like, oh, your team sucks, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I had an unhealthy hate for Alvin Harper for the next few years because not only did he make that big grab in 92, he did it again in 93. And I'm just like, oh my God, someone killed that guy because he keeps making those big plays for the Cowboys. And of course the team would get sweet revenge the next year, but the year after that, the Niners lost to the Packers, and the Cowboys would go on to win the Super Bowl, so they wouldn't win 3 out of 4. But those 92-93 years were so tough because, you know, like, everyone's been saying Cowboys, Cowboys, Cowboys. Here I am, like, one of the few Niners fans in my school.
How do you think I felt, though, Ray? You know, I hate the Niners. I definitely hate the Cowboys, obviously, because I'm a Niners fan. So,
right.
While they were great games, obviously, I just watched them. They were great football, obviously. At the same time, it's like, oh God, I feel this shit again. Cowboys, Niners again. I will say this though, I root for you guys to beat the Cowboys because I got. I was very happy you guys won 94 when you had Deion because I'm a good fan. So that was 1 year I actually root for you guys to win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because like I've said it on Twitter before where it's like, I will wear any sports jersey. I don't even care if it's the Celtics because I have a healthy respect for the Celtics. I will wear any sports jersey except for the Cowboys.
I don't blame one bit. I don't blame one bit. Now, here's the funny thing now, too. I've actually, for some reason in recent years, I've kind of softened up on the Cowboys a little bit now because I actually, and you know, this is not a very popular take here, I'm going to tell you, but I'm a fan of Tony Romo. I think Tony Romo is one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the league, and has
right. been. Right. Yeah.
So you put that guy in Cincinnati, you put that guy in Houston, a team that actually doesn't need a quarterback to get over the hump, and that team's a Super Bowl contender. That guy's really that talented. Romo's
one of
the final teams that actually should have won 2-14 to 500 or better. So
yeah.
I'm a big Romo guy, to be honest with you. So I'm actually softened on the Cowboys mainly because of Tony Romo.
Well, I've softened up a lot. Period. Like, I have a lot of friends who are Cowboys fans on Twitter. That's fine, you know? And I respect the hell out of those people, so I'm okay with that. But still, like, I just had those memories of high school. It's like, oh, my God, Alvin Harper, Alvin Harper, Alvin Harper. I'm just kind of like, ah, I don't like them. But, you know.
He made some big plays in both of the title games, 92-93.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, I've developed a healthy respect for every team, even the Cowboys, but I just won't wear their jersey, that's all. You know, like, I've even tweeted Emmitt Smith in the past. It's like, man, I used to hand it to my boys, man. That sucks. You know, because one of my good friends on Twitter, Octagon Sports, Jennifer Keene, represents Emmitt Smith. So I get to tweet him once in a while. But also, like even back then, like, I didn't like the Falcons that much. It wasn't as heartbreaking as the Cowboys, but I didn't like the Falcons because they beat the Niners in the 98 playoffs. And I tweeted Jamal Anderson as well. So like, hey, Jamal, you said it to my boys too. And he's like, oh man, they were tough. I didn't like going against them. So, I developed a healthy respect for the Niners opponents who beat them in the past. But, you know, 92-93 will always stand out to me, which is probably more heartbreaking to me than the 91 right. Lakers. Cause I understand the 91 Lakers were actually big dogs coming into the playoffs, coming to the Western Finals. It's just that it was just aggravated by my brother who liked the Bulls so much. So,
yeah, Bulls and Bulls fans. I mean, to me, that's one of the most annoying things I ever had to go through. I remember I was Heat fan back then too. I was Heat fan back in the early '90s when they sucked. I went through hell with the Heat. So having people, you know, the way people were with the big three in Miami when people were like, oh, I love the Heat, you know, LeBron's there, or whatever. And I hate them. I can relate because, you know, for me that's how I viewed the Bulls and Jordan Pippen and Grant and then later on Rodman, you know, as a kid growing up. So I can relate a little bit with that aspect.
You, I was there the days of Keith Atkins and Ronnie Cycli and Kevin Edwards.
Yeah.
And Alan Ogg. Rest in peace, Alan Ogg.
Rest in peace, Alan Ogg, by the way. He died.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody has that team. Everybody has that one team they hate in a sport, like, more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
You is the Cowboys. It's the Eagles, actually. So I'm totally better with you, man. I'm totally there with you.
Yeah, but that's what shaped us to be sports fans, man. We'll go through some heartbreaks ourselves, even though we didn't play in the game. We definitely went through it with them. And
yeah.
I guess that's what made us, you know, the way we are now, I suppose. That's why I don't like the Cowboys. And that's why you don't like the Eagles and the Bulls or whatever, right?
So, I played the Bulls. I played the Bulls.
Yeah.
I don't even put the Bulls when it benefits the Heat. If it benefits the Heat, then I would put the Bulls. Other than that, I can care less. You know, Derrick Rose, who cares? You know?
Well, that's why we are what we are now. So thanks, EJ.
You got it, Ray-Ray.
It's Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray-Ray is Fundamental podcast. Once. That was enough.
Before we get to chatting with Pamela Horton, let me just remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at RareRay.net and on Stitcher, and this show is being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow the podcast Twitter at RareRayIsFun, follow my personal Twitter at TheNoLookPass, and go ahead and check out my basketball site, the NBA site called TheNoLookPass at TheNoLookPass.com. So, without any further ado, let's talk video games and Chrono Trigger with Miss October 2012 and your gamer next door, Pamela Horton.
Ray-Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 54. I've done way too many of these, by the way. My guest! She is the host of the YouTube gaming channel Gamer Next Door. She's also Playboy's Miss October 2012, but she's definitely way cooler than you ever will be because she loves Chrono Trigger, which we'll talk about in a bit. Pamela Horton, what's up?
Hey guys! Oh my gosh, I am so excited to be here. I haven't done a fun podcast in a while, and I heard that you like Chrono Trigger, so
this isn't awkward at all because I just messaged you out of nowhere. I just watched a random Playboy video of you talking about games, and it's like, I love Chrono Trigger. I'm like, oh my god, I must talk to you now because you like Chrono Trigger.
And that's actually what the sell point was for working with you on the podcast. I was like, you're like, you want to talk about Chrono Trigger? I was like, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, so let's start with the beginnings first, okay? So what was the game that started your addiction to video games?
Oh, definitely. I try not to sound like I have it meticulously, like, memorized, but, you know, I commonly get asked this question, but it's Linked to the Past on the Super Nintendo. My dad and my brother are both, or I should say my dad was an avid gamer, but my dad and my brother were both avid gamers, and, because I would sit and watch them all the time, they went out on a limb and were like, hey, like, why don't we just let her play? And I was hooked from the very beginning. I haven't been able to put any sort of video games down. I can't go a day in my life without playing some sort of video game. So.
the funny thing is that the first message I sent you is like, oh, happiness increased by 5 rupees. And I was just like, yeah, you better know this reference right here. And I'm just like, yeah, I have big trouble coming up. So it's funny because you play Chrono Trigger every year.
I
play Link to the Past every year.
Oh, Oh, really?
Yeah, I just finished it like a month ago.
Oh, wow. Very nice. Well, I mean, yeah. Link to the Past is one of those games that I played so repetitively as a young girl. I had the first sequence when you save the princess and you do the go to the sanctuary. I had that whole thing memorized completely. I could do it with my eyes closed, like including which doors to go through. I didn't even need to light up the dungeons underneath the sanctuary because I knew where the bats were. I knew where everything was. But that's one of those games that, you know, the nostalgia's there because of what it meant to me as the beginning of my gaming career. But when it came to Chrono Trigger, that game is just, there are so many, it blew my mind that one game could have so many varying possibilities for endings and for characters on your team. And I know having Magus on your character or on your roster is just one person, but still, it was crazy that you didn't actually automatically get the option to have a character in your game. And the possibilities make it so much fun to play every time. It's like playing the game anew every time I play it.
Yeah. We'll talk more about Chrono Trigger in a bit. Was it tough during high school for you? Because I know it was tough for me early on, because I was labeled as that nerd that loves Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. That I just gave away my age there. But I know video games became more accepted as time went on. Was it tough for you?
It was tough for me, not because of specifically video games. I feel that in high school specifically, I was accepted. I wasn't hated, but I wasn't liked, and I loved being on that line. But then again, you know, if you talk to anybody that I went to high school with, they will all say, you know, Pam was her own person. She didn't care what other people thought. I carried a blanket around with me because, you know, I call it my tactical blanket. I wore all of my Pokemon shirt. I wore, you know, my character on my sleeves. I was never afraid to do and be who I was. So for the most part in high school, it didn't give me a hard time. Now, middle school, that's where it was an issue. In middle school, I was hardcore bullied. And I'm talking about, you watch those cheesy Nickelodeon movies where, you know, the kid gets bullied and you're like, oh man, they really do stuff to their lockers and they really mess with their clothes in gym class. I had that kind of stuff happen to me because I was different. And the different that I was, you know, I was, for starters, it was a Catholic community. But also too, I loved Pokemon. So I wore Pokemon everything. And, it was a means with which people targeted me for bullying. And I learned, one of the hardest lessons at such a young age that, you know, if you continue to be who you are, you know, you're always going to be able to persevere. You always have to remember that, you know, how you feel about yourself on the inside is what matters. It doesn't matter what people are saying or doing on the outside. They come and go. They're not going to be around forever. So
right.
You got to just be yourself.
Yeah. And being yourself will be around for a long
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
Guys that just, you know, come and go and just have a little fun for like a minute and then they're gone, right?
Exactly. So,
what was your system of choice then?
I've always been a Nintendo girl and for the most part that kind of wasn't really my choice. I'm really glad that, you know, it happened the way that it did because I think that if I was given a choice, it would have been my choice. My family was a huge Nintendo family. We had a subscription in Nintendo Power. We had the original Nintendo. We had the Super Nintendo. We got the N64 when it came out. We got the GameCube. You know, like it was definitely a Nintendo household. I actually had to go to my friend's house to play Final Fantasy on their PSX. Like it was just very much a Nintendo family.
Obviously, you're a model now, but really what you want is a career in gaming. So is the Gamer Next Door show the first step towards your world domination?
Well, actually, I'd like to say that I've kind of hung up the model, the model title a little bit, mostly because I'm more focused on personality. Modeling is, you know, when people ask me how I got into modeling, I always tell them that I tripped and fell. I'm not a method model. I don't watch my weight. I work out because I enjoy it and it's good for you mentally and physically, not because I feel that I need to look good. And, you know, Playboy was another thing that just so happened to, like, fall into place. And I knew that Playboy was a means of opportunity. And as a young girl coming from Kansas, I'm not going to be able to find very many video game opportunities in Kansas, and Playboy was a doorway that helped launch into a career, and I'm very fortunate that Playboy was willing to keep me in-house and let me grow my brand, which is Gamer Next Door, which is, you know, in case anybody who's listening doesn't know what Gamer Next Door is, it's a personality-based YouTube channel with gameplay videos and things of that nature. But there is we pride ourselves on it being exclusively personality-based. We try not to break in or give in to that stereotype that people have of Playboy and, you know, show right. skin and be sexy. And, you know, it's very fun and silly and dorky. So
it really is,
I've actually, you know, like I'm not reaching any further than where I'm at right now because I get so much fulfillment in my job. I love the people that I work with. I love the people I meet. I get to play video games for a living. I'm just, I'm so excited and so lucky to do what I do. So, I mean, model, gamer, yes.
I'm kind of jealous because, like, yeah, you get to play video games for a living while I get to watch basketball for a living. How terrible that is. Anyway.
Well, if you're passionate about basketball, it's not an issue.
Yeah, of course not. But I still love to play games. It's funny because, going off topic a little bit, my first dream myself was to write for Electronic Gaming Monthly. That was my dream.
Really?
But, yeah, but I never got to do it. So instead, I'm writing about sports instead.
Well, I mean, hey.
That's okay, I guess.
As long as it's a passion of yours.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking of Gamer Next Door, I'm still laughing at your Dead or Alive Extreme 3 video because
the actual gameplay or the unboxing?
Yeah, the gameplay.
Okay. It's
because I own the first game and I already thought that was awkward to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
Because they say it's Dead or Alive Extreme Volleyball, but really it's a lot of skin, a lot of zooming in,
and that was like going back to what I was saying before about Gamer Next Door not being like sexualized. That was a really tough one for me to agree to do, mostly because, you know, like I know that video is going to get a lot of views, it's going to get a lot of clicks. You know, people are going to watch it, but they're not watching it for the right reason. So I wanted to make sure that we made it clear that it was a fun game, and Mike is weird. But I think we did a really good job. It was really fun. Everybody was really enjoying me being uncomfortable, which I really was. I was so uncomfortable.
It really is because, like, you know, I was watching my guy friend play this, and he's just, like, going through the swimsuits and zooming in on stuff, and I was kind of like,
oh, this is
really a game, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yet I ended up buying it anyway, so who's weird now? Anyway, any game out there that you feel that you're so untouchable that you just say, oh, you can't beat me in this game?
Well, I don't know that it still stands, but I with Mario Kart on the Wii, I was internationally ranked.
Wow!
Like, I remember I received one moment of pure validation from a random person. When I was talking to them about how, oh, yeah, I'm internationally ranked, I did time trials and stuff for Rainbow Road, I was like, she was like, oh, my God, you're Kitty Rar. And I was like, how do you know that? She was like, because it's all Japanese names, and then it's just Kitty Rar. And I was like, I had someone I didn't know, like, remember my username and then call me on it. And, like, I couldn't believe it. And she was like, I remembered it because I was like, oh, it has to be a girl because Kitty Rar. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, so now everybody thinks that, you know, like, it's a huge challenge where it's just like, oh, you think you're so good at Mario Kart, huh? Oh, well, I'm just going to, like, and then they get, I'm not a competitive person. It's just, I got really good at a game because I had a lot of time on my hands.
Well, see, I'm horrible at Mario Kart. Even, like, at the time, my 8-year-old niece was beating me in Mario Kart. So that's how bad I am. Like,
some people have their game.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, like, mine's, let me think about it for a minute. I guess NBA Jam or something like that, you know?
And you would totally kick my butt in that. Like, I tried to play 2K16 at a 2K event and they had to teach me how to pass the ball because I was just struggling. It was so hard for me.
And basketball's not your game. Like, you had to know a little bit about basketball.
Yeah.
I
played basketball in middle school, but it's not like I was, like, on fire for it. It just wasn't something that, you know.
Yeah, you're not passionate about, which is fine. Yeah, exactly. So, let's talk about Chrono Trigger. You were, like, 2 when the game first came out, I think.
Two? I'm 28 now. How old do you think I was?
Hey, I'm just trying to be nice about age here, okay?
I don't care. I embrace myself in all forms.
That's great, though. That's great. I knew you were 28. Anyway.
Creepy.
I know. Hey, I had to do some research here,
okay?
No,
it's okay. It was for the show. You got to do research for the show.
Yes, exactly. When did you? But you were still young when the game came out, though. So when did you hear this?
I was. I don't remember how or why my dad and my brother were excited to get it. I think it was because my brother was a huge fan of Dragon Ball, and as you know, the art design is done by Akira Toriyama. And so when he saw it in Nintendo Power before it was released, he was super excited about it. I was super excited about it because of the art as well. So, of course, I was so young that I couldn't just be like, I'm going to buy this game. So my dad and my brother got it and, of course, played it. And since there was the ability to have three save files, my dad and my brother each had one. Or I should say my brother and his friend had one that they shared. and then my dad had one, and then I had one. I actually still have the cartridge that has my original save file on it, and I haven't touched it because I'm afraid to.
Yeah, I just like you saw my Instagram picture. Like I just took it out for like the first time in 10 years. Actually,
wow.
Let me tell you my Chrono Trigger story really quick because So I didn't beat this game until 2006, and it was my third time trying to play through it because my save file kept getting erased.
Oh,
but this
no.
time around, but this time around it held through. So, I was playing it late night. One night in 2006, and I needed to beat Lavos because the next day I was to go take off for Vegas.
Oh my!
Yeah, what an awesome idea that was.
Yeah.
So I couldn't beat Lavos for the life of me, right? Mm-hmm. And finally, around 3 a.m, I beat him. And I'm like, oh, finally I did it! And I looked at the clock. It's oh my god, it's 3. And I'm supposed to leave at like 6. So
well, you could be like my brother and beat the first phase of Lavos and be like, yeah, I did it. What?
I know, right? So we could just like pretend, oh yeah, we beat him. Sure, no problem. But so I watched the ending and everything, and by the time it was over, it was like 3:45 in the morning, and I'm just kind of like, okay, I probably shouldn't go to sleep because I might just fall asleep the rest of the way through, and I'm going to back to Vegas. And by the way, I'm driving, so this is
oh, jeez.
I know. See, so the lesson learned here is that don't play a video game all night before you take a 4-hour trip to Vegas.
Yeah, especially when you're driving. Unless you're the passenger, in which case, like, you can sleep or play your games in the car.
Yeah. So, I go to my friend's house, and I pick up, you know, three of my friends, and we're on our way to Vegas. And here, and people are like, hey, so are you cool to drive? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm lying through my teeth. Yeah, I'm fine. And besides, I don't want to let my friends drive because of my car. So, you know, that's how weird I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I drive, and I'm just like, I'm swaying back and forth.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm just swaying, and then I can hear the terror in my friend's voices. Ray, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm speaking out all loud and everything.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and somehow we got through this. I just kept telling me, hey, guys, talk to me. Just to keep me awake. And it's like, Ray, did you sleep at all last night? Yes, I did! Like, through my teeth the entire time. Finally, like, we did make it to Vegas, like, without major incidents. Thank goodness. And then we get to the hotel, and they're like, Ray, are you okay? And then I just slumped to bed.
Straight to bed.
And I was just dead for, like, the rest of the day while they all gambled. But well, anyway, yeah, so...
safely.
Yeah, so basically what I'm trying to say here is that Chrono Trigger nearly killed me.
No, that's not what I want to hear.
I know, I'm just kidding, it's really my fault. But anyway, but Chrono Trigger's a great game. I was that addicted. So, but yeah, that's my Chrono Trigger story.
Oh,
and
so many.
I'm sure do you want to tell one? Is it safe for family consumption?
Yeah, well, I mean, most of what I do and what I say is safe for family consumption. I'm like a child in an adult's body.
That's fine.
I do have a potty mouth sometimes, but that's because I get overexcited.
Well, we all do at some point.
And this applies to most of the Super Nintendo games that I had. When I would get into really intense boss battles, and this is before I learned how to do the level grind or the experience grind, I would play Chrono Trigger or Earthbound before my bus got to my house in the morning. And since you had like input one and input two on the TV, I would just switch it to TV and I'd leave a note from my mom and tell her, do not turn off the Super Nintendo because I'm playing a game. And for the most part, my mom would listen. But the first time, the very first time that I ever got into an encounter with Lavos, my mom turned off the Super Nintendo. And like, I had just beat the third or the second phase and I was just starting the third phase and I know, I was just like, and it's really hard to, as a young adult, to get frustrated with your mother, who obviously did not do it, you know, maliciously. But I was a little upset. So I went for a bike ride and may or may not have worried my mom a little bit too much because I didn't come home before sunset. But that was, and that's one of those stories that, you know, I look back on and I remember, like, you know, what sort of accommodations I made for myself in order to play a game where it's just like, you know, I'd wait until I'd like sit in my room with the door closed until my parents went to bed and then I'd get up and I'd go into the living room to play my games. And at the time it was like, there's no repercussions for missing sleep. It's like I could go on 3 hours of sleep and be just fine. But my parents were very accepting of me playing video games. So for the most part, I don't have any stories of, you know, parents mowing my games over because I played too much. But then again, I also spent a lot of time in doing extracurriculars, playing outside, climbing trees, breaking my wrist, doing various outside things. I was kind of a tomboy. So my parents just wanted me to do more than just game, which is very reasonable. And so they were pretty cool about, you know, letting me keep my system on. But they didn't like coming out into the living room in the middle of the night to find me out there.
Hey, this is Matthew Mercer, voice of Abe the Trapper from Evolve, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast.
Serena Winters of LakersNation.com, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
I was thinking some Super Nintendo too, because my dad specifically would not let me play video games during school days.
Really?
Yeah.
That's poopy.
Yeah. So I had to go out play ball or something, you know, do something else that doesn't involve playing video games. So
my dad actually. What girl isn't a daddy's girl? Around the time that Majora's Mask came out, I was grounded, and so my dad, my brother went and picked it up, and they were playing, and my dad, like, told my mom that, I was downstairs doing my homework, and he actually hooked up the Nintendo 64 for me so that I could play Majora's Mask. And, you know, kind of broke my being grounded especially because it was my birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was grounded on my birthday and my dad was just like, okay, you can play. I'm like, yay. My parents are cool.
My parents were not. I'm just kidding. No, anyway. So Chrono Trigger, I look back at it, and it's really sad, to be honest, right? Like, the story is awesome, and time travel's, you know, very interesting, but there's a lot of, like, I guess, tragic events that happen.
Yeah, dark themes, tragic events. But I feel that when I play Chrono Trigger as an adult, I see, adult life scenarios and scenes played in a way that a child can consume them. Like, you know what's going on. As a child, you're like, oh, well, you know, this person did a bad thing. And so that's why, you know, this person's upset. And so, you know, it helps as a young child learn a little bit more about, you know, how we are socially in life. But as an adult, you're right. There is just like some hardcore themes and a little bit of abuse. I mean, come on. Like, Ayla be smacking bitches.
You know, it's funny because, like, last night I was playing late night, obviously, and I got to the part where they were trying to get the electricity going for, I think it was, what's that dome's name again? Aerosdome?
I mean, there's Aerosdome, there's Protodome, and there's Protodome.
Okay. And I got to the part where they started beating Robo up, like all these robots.
Didn't
and I'm
you
just
cry?
Like,
the music makes
yeah!
you cry!
It's so heartbreaking. I'm just like, I nearly cried on that part.
Oh, my God.
It had been like 10, 11 years since I've seen that part,
yeah.
You know? So
and the music, like, Chrono Trigger as a game isn't just, like, the gameplay is awesome to me. The music is awesome to me. The art is awesome to me. And that was one of those moments where the music actually fueled that pain when, like, that sad music's playing in the background and all you can hear are the sound effects of them beating up Robo. It's just like, no.
I know. It was so heartbreaking. But then, you know, of course, later on, we got that payoff. It's like, oh,
yeah,
Luca fixed him. Uh-huh. Yeah,
take that. Well, yeah. And also, too, like, I feel that the pinnacle sad moment, of course, is when Chrono sacrifices himself for everybody. Like, that, and then, like, the part where everybody realizes what happens is just, like, thinking back on it now, even though I've played it so many times, it still moves me. Like, that is just, like, that is, like, you know, the typical loyal, amazing friend that everybody wishes that they could have, you know, like, someone that loves you so much they would, you know, give everything for you to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's a strong, powerful thing to have in a game.
You know what I found funny about Chrono Trigger sometimes is, like, you know, you start in 1080, and I'm just like, well, they have a telepod in 1080. How come we don't have one of those now, right?
Yeah.
I just find it really funny how they depict the years there. But
did you play it before 1999, like when it was like 1999 AD, and then you're just like, oh no, and then, you know, like 1999 is a bad year, bad things are gonna happen, Lavos is gonna come up through the ground.
I know, we shouldn't even be doing this podcast right now because Lavos came in and, like, destroyed the world.
But we did it, we saved them, we saved time, we saved the world.
We totally did, yeah. I bought the game in 97, by the way. But I didn't beat it until 2006 because too many games came out, and I told you about my save file getting erased, stuff like that. So then I went on a two-year binge of, like, RPGs.
Well, you didn't have to beat the game to know that something happened in 1999 after you go to, you know, like, the future, and you're up in Aerosdome, and you find out, like, hey, Lavos pops up through the ground, and he pew-pews, and everything explodes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who was your favorite character, by the way?
Ayla. Ayla. I love Ayla so much. She's just like, we live in an era where, you know, a lot of people have what they say and do at face value, and then what they say on the internet, and, you know, like, basically a two-faced nature. And Ayla, she was a straight shooter. She told it like it is. She didn't, like, dink around. You know, when someone did a bad thing, it was bad, and they got punished. And, you know, like, she's like, well, why do we have to do this? Like, she was very open with questioning. And also, too, she was a strong woman. She didn't need to rely on weapons. She used her hands, even though they depicted her with a club.
Yeah, exactly. I like Chrono, but I like Kino best, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, she was just, like, straight up.
Yeah.
Like, I like your friends, funny friends. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so... Did you cosplay as Ayla once?
I did. It was a very last minute put together shoot that Playboy did, featuring some of my favorite me cosplaying as some of my favorite characters. Ayla was one of them. And, you know, like, they wanted, I actually, before that, I did dress up as Ayla at, ACON in Dallas, Texas in, I think it was 2009 or 2010. And it was the first time I'd ever gone to, a real convention, because I traveled, I stayed at a hotel. There were anime conventions in Wichita, but I mean, nobody's going to anime conventions or anything like that in Wichita. I'm just going to be honest, and I've never had a good experience at the anime convention in Wichita. But I did have a lot of fun at AECON, and actually the following year I ended up as an artist at the Artist Alley, so that was really fun.
That's good, yeah. I used to go to anime conventions, but it's been a while since I went, like, I guess I had the full experience, mm-hmm. because, it's, you know, I did it from 98 to 2006. That's a long time.
Yeah.
To go to anime cons, and then I stopped by Anime Expo last year.
Oh.
Just to say hi to friends, you know, because
yeah.
I still have friends all around the place that does this, that cosplay still.
Mm-hmm.
But AX was like my main. That was like my.
That was your jam.
That was my jam. That was like Christmas back then.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. What was the most annoying part of Chrono Trigger?
The most annoying part.
Yeah. There has to be something.
Let me think. I gotta think about. Probably. I don't.
It's okay to say.
Probably the bike race in like I freaking hated that bike race because I always feel like, you know, like, oh, I got the timing down, boost, damn it, and then you like have to do the whole thing over again. I think that's the only thing that I ever found like super annoying.
It was interesting. They didn't really do much of that bike race. It's just like you're just watching them race and then just boost at the right time, right? So.
But I found it annoying because you had to, like, if you wanted to not be bumping his butt, you had to, like, go back and forth and, like, try mm-hmm. to avoid him because he's just trying to get ahead of you. And I think that annoyance is just mostly me at a young age and not so much right now. I know mm-hmm. how to do it now, but...
Yeah, because Chrono Trigger is basically flawless to you,
right? it's up there. It's up there. It's not flawless, but, you know, because, like, as an adult who's played a lot of video games since then, you know, I realize that there are parts where I'm like, okay, the developers copped out on this, and, you know, like, mm-hmm. this was probably going to be something, and then it wasn't, and, you know, the insider info.
Favorite moment of that game?
I think... Oh, man, there's so many.
There are a lot.
There are so many. I think when Chrono comes back, when you finally get the Chrono Trigger and mm-hmm. you're up on that mountaintop and Marley walks up and then just lays on him and mm-hmm. it's just the sweetest thing ever. I think that was one of those moments that was just like, you know, like you went full circle. You felt the loss. You were fighting mm-hmm. to get him back, and you know, people were feeling that pain, and then you finally get him back after a long, treacherous climb up a stupid mountain, and you finally get him back, and it's just one of the most gratifying moments.
The game isn't very long either. It's like, what, 20 hours?
Something like that. If you're not counting, like, you know, grind or fun little side
right.
quests or whatever.
Well, it said like 19 hours of my save file, so and it was like level 55 or whatever.
Okay.
So yeah, so let's end this with a little power rankings, really quick. Okay.
Okay.
So, all right. So the first edition, you'll be my first victim. I mean, first edition of the fundamental power rankings.
Fundamental power rankings.
So give me your top five. Favorite games?
Top five favorite games ever?
Ever.
I'll start with number five. I think number five is going to have to be, and this is for personal reasons, number five is going to have to be Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fallout 4 was the first game that actually made me passionate about a first-person shooter. And that was huge for me because I had avoided first-person shooters. I never liked them, and it was because I played Fallout on my PC, and now I'm a PC first-person shooter player and so much more open to playing games like that now.
I still avoid them because I was so bad at GoldenEye that I'm like,
I think
okay.
Everybody was. It was part of the times.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so number four, A Link to the Past, because
yep.
of what it was. It's the first game. It was the first Legend of Zelda I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Number three would have to be Earthbound. Earthbound is, you know, of course, one of my favorite games of all time. But it was another one of those games that my dad just so happened to like. He was like, he saw it and he thought that the Starman on the box looked funny, and so he got it for me for my 9th birthday. And thought that I would enjoy it. Had no context, didn't know what it was, didn't know anything, right. And then got it for me for my 9th birthday. And it ended up being one of the coolest games I've ever played. And then number 2 is definitely Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm. Majora's Mask is my favorite installment out of any Legend of Zelda game, because it broke the mold, you know, like there was the temples, and then there was the, you know, sort of linear questing, and, you know, Majora's Mask kind of broke that and also made it really fun with the masks and the silly little quests and the hand and the toilet and, and then, of course my number 1 game of all time is Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, we know what number 1 is. awesome talking games with you. So go ahead and pub your YouTube show, pub your social media,
okay,
whatever else.
Super PR mode, Pam, go.
Here we go.
If you liked what you heard on this podcast, you can follow some of my content on youtube.com/gamernextdoor. I also do Twitch streams, twitch.tv/playboy. We usually stream every Wednesday, but we're still working on that schedule. If you want to follow me on social media, it's at PamelaHorton13, all across the board, Vine, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all them goodies. And if you want to add me in-game anywhere, it's Neratrite, Neratrite. I would love to play with you.
Pamela, thanks again. We shall do this again soon.
Yes, please.
And I don't know how, I would love to game with you soon too. I don't know, it could be like Mario Kart, which I'm horrible at, Mario Party, which I'm really bad at, but NBA Jam, I can kill you.
Well,
so
you know what? Now you have all my gamer info. That's it. That's, you know, Xbox One, PS4, Steam, Battle.net, anything. Like I'm more than happy to play with you.
Game Boy, ColecoVision, Atari.
OG.
Yeah, Pong. I know. I am so old. Thanks, Pamela.
No problem. Game over,
yeah! #BlameRayRay.
Thanks, Fox. I thought they had me. Okay, bye!